In the 1970s, the ultimate trip for any backpacker was the storied hippie trail from Istanbul to Kathmandu. As a 23-year-old, I made the trek, and like a travel writer in training, I documented it in my journal. Leaping off a moving train in Yugoslavia, getting lost in Lahore, getting high for my first time in Herat, battling leeches in Pokhara, making the scene on Freak Street in Kathmandu. It's all in my 60,000-word journal, which is now my newest book. To celebrate the release of On the Hippie Trail, I'm joined by my travel partner on that trip, Gene Openshaw, to reminisce about that epic adventure. And you're invited to stow away with us now as we spin a few yarns from what was absolutely my trip of a lifetime. Gene, thanks for joining us.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Hi.
Yes. You know, we traveled together in 1973, did the typical European whirlwind tour. And then when we graduated from college, we teamed up again in 1978 and did what really was the ultimate trip on this planet for kids just getting out of school, the hippie trail. Looking back on that, it really was a special trip at a special time for two young guys, wasn't it?
Yeah, it sure caught us at a kind of watershed point in our lives. We just graduated from college, 22 and 23, and we're not looking forward to launching into the conventional corporate path. And we were looking around for what to do and some kind of adventure, you know, and it was also the spirit of the times. Remember, this is 1978. There's still that idea of you want to find yourself and the road less traveled. And I think we got caught up in the spirit of that. And what fit the bill for that? The hippie trail.
And, you know, now I travel because I know things and I want to see them. I think on this trip, I just wanted to go behind the dark side of the moon. I wanted to be away.
India was like the edge of the world. You know, there'd be dragons. And I think that was part of the allure for us.
And for younger people, it's hard to imagine a world with no safety net, no internet. You can't withdraw money. You've got it all in your money belt. You've got no guidebooks. You've got no way to connect with your loved ones back home. Kind of scary.
Boy, I think you just put your finger on it, that you don't have, like today, you don't have that connection to your familiar world. You're out there on your own.
Wow. And so I don't know what got into me. You must have thought I was kind of boring because every night, apparently, I wrote in this journal, just fiendishly interested in documenting it. But this was years before I was a travel teacher. I was a piano teacher at the time. But I had this journal. And then during the pandemic, I kind of just discovered it. It was vivid. And you and I both worked on this book, editing it. And I'm just so thankful that you're my editor anyways in so many of my writing projects, but you happen to have been my travel partner on this trip. What was it like for you to read that journal 40 years later?
Yeah, it was like encountering your 22-year-old self again. He just sort of walked in the door, and it's you and me and this couple of guys that I kind of forgot even existed. Yeah. And then here they were. What really struck me as I read your journal? It was our bravado. You're writing about this stuff, you're journaling, and it's really good. And you're just describing what we do in a very matter-of-fact way. And I'm looking at it going, yeah, but it was wow.
I've never thought about that bravado. That, I mean, I don't usually think of me and bravado in the same sentence.
Or foolishness, whatever it is.
Yeah. It was bravado, baby. And it was, I got to admit, if I was my parent, I'd be nervous about what we were about to do.
Oh, absolutely.
We were clueless. We had no money. We were not reckless, but we were also saying yes to serendipity.
Yes, but we didn't know what we were getting into. That's the thing. We got into hairier situations than we expected.
And I remember every time we got 100 miles farther away from the Greek Isles, I kept thinking we could still turn around and have a vacation. And we had a huddle because it got scarier and deeper, and we decided to keep on pushing.
I remember that moment when we were talking about turning around. We were in Tehran, if I remember. Yeah. And that's like almost halfway to India. And we went, do we cut bait and run or do we keep forging ahead? And I remember, the exact moment. We were totally tapped out from just getting as far as Tehran. And we're on this street corner in Tehran. It's 95 degrees. And we're lost. We pull out a map. And then suddenly we hear this guy go, hey, can I help you? That was Abe, remember? And we ran into this Iranian who took us in, fed us, let us stay in his apartment for a couple of days. And I think that was the moment we kind of went, yes, we can do this. We can carry on.
We were in squalor after a three-day bus ride in Tehran, hanging out with grease monkeys and hippies, barefoot people whose feet were like hoofs. Yeah. We were learning that on this hippie trail, there was two kinds of travelers, those who know they have worms and those who don't know they have worms. You were sick at the time, and we met Abe.
And it was just that nice oasis that we needed on this long journey. You know, as I think about the trip, there's kind of like three chapters of it. We go from Istanbul, we cross the deserts of Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, and that was kind of this rough stretch. And then we continue on to the sort of Shangri-La of India with all that intensity. And then we finish the trip at the end of the hippie trail, the ultimate mecca of freaks and hippies and us, Kathmandu.
Oh, man. This is Travel with Rick Steves. I'm joined by my buddy Gene Openshaw. And we're sharing memories from our epic hippie trail trip from Istanbul to Kathmandu back in 1978. Gene was 22 and I was 23. And we had no money, but we had lots of what Gene just called bravado. Gene Openshaw's a travel writer. He's a composer, a humorist, a philosopher. His latest book is Michelangelo at Midlife. For more on Gene's work, you can go to his website, geneopenshaw.com. Gene's been a collaborator with me for writing projects for decades. And along with many books that we've co-authored over the years, Gene edited my newest book, which is what we're talking about today, On the Hippie Trail. So, Gene, you were talking about the arch of the trip. It was a long way to get from Istanbul to Kathmandu, and there was no guidebooks, and you and I are both into guidebooks. What are your memories of traveling without information?
Oh, boy, yeah. There really wasn't. It was kind of like a 3,500-mile like you called it, the dark side of the moon, sort of radio silence, and we didn't know. There was that one guidebook, the Bit Guide, right. But it was a staple-bound mimeograph thing. And most of the information that we got was from our fellow travelers. You know, they might call it today, you know, crowdsourcing.
Crowdsourcing. But our crowd was the international gang of backpackers on a bus for 42 hours across Turkey. And I would, like a little beggar, go up and down the aisle.
Yeah. It was that, you know, the code of the road. When someone would know something, you owed it to your fellow traveler to pass that information along.
And that's what the Bit Guide was. It was, as you mentioned, a staple-bound collection of these loose communiques from the road, which also included, to just sort of goose the adventure dimension of this, people who were busted at borders and were in prison and what they needed for their own comfort and health. This person's doing time in Afghanistan because he tried to do this at the border between Iran and Afghanistan, and he needs blankets. It would actually say that.
Talking about borders, you remember getting to the border of Afghanistan? You know, my memory of that border is a dull needle stuck in my arm because they decided just arbitrarily that I needed a vaccination that I didn't have on my card.
And my memory was the way that needle bent when they tried to put it into your arm. And then we got on a bus finally and headed for Herat, which was just a delight. Let me read a little bit about Herat, the first stop in Afghanistan. This is just from the book, and I'd like to stoke your memory of that. We took a nighttime walk. Mingling was a bit intensified. I didn't know if it was because of the hashish or because I was in a very good mood, but I was tickled by little things, like a man weighing tomatoes. Hustlers became playful. The sun had gone down, the lanterns came on, chariots with torches charged through the darkness. Herat is small, but it really doesn't matter because no street is ever the same if you walk through it a second or a third time. I just love Herat.
Oh, yeah. That's what kind of where the trip sort of began, after that long stretch from Istanbul through Iran. Maybe that's also because that's where we first smoked hashish. But
where I first smoked, you were the experienced pot smoker.
Well,
relatively speaking.
Yeah, I wasn't exactly Snoop Dogg, but yeah, I was cut more or less.
And I had decided I only want to smoke where I feel comfortable and there's no peer pressure. And it just felt so normal in Afghanistan. So I said, Gene, take me there. But then we would walk, whether you're smoking pot or not, you would just walk in a different direction. And every 5 or 6 meters or yards, there'd be another shop, another artisan. And we didn't need a guidebook. We'd just walk and immerse ourselves in that culture.
Yeah. Well, it was almost like in a movie or something, and you'd look at one thing and then you'd take 5 or 10 steps and suddenly you're in a different scene. Or like these manger-like settings that the incense or the smoke is coming out. And
with the lantern light, it was like a Rembrandt painting. The light sources were just vivid.
Yes. And we were getting these little glimpses into Afghani life. And it was very wonderful.
And I remember it was curious for us, how do we properly wave to somebody or greet somebody? What is the physical thing? And we tried different things. And we came up with, in Herat, you kiss your hand, and then you bring your hand to your heart. And that's how we would greet people, and that resonated with people.
It did work, and I'm glad that we came across that, because bridging that cultural divide was very difficult. We didn't understand it, and we were about as culturally sensitive as people would be in those days. Nowadays, we take globalism so much for granted. Everybody knows different cultures and accepts them. But we grew up in a time when that was just not as common. We were trying very hard to bridge that divide between us Westerners and the people around us.
My longtime travel buddy Gene Openshaw is reliving the epic travel adventure we shared right out of college in the 1970s, right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Gene's helped edit the journal I wrote on that adventure, which I sort of rediscovered in the downtime we had during the pandemic lockdown. The new book is called On the Hippie Trail. It's being released February 4th. So, Gene, you know, we went finally from Afghanistan over Khyber Pass, and I remember it was like a cultural and an environmental continental divide. We left the Muslim world, and we entered the Hindu world. We left the vast arid expanses, and we entered the Indian subcontinent, which is so lush, and it was monsoon time. We never saw the mountains, but we saw lots of monsoon, and it was a beautiful, vibrant, luscious sort of life. And I remember crossing the border of India thinking, I'm coming home. It was the weirdest. Do you remember the border of India?
I definitely do, yeah.
Well, what were your feelings as we crossed into India?
Well, it was a lot of work to get there, and it was finally a sense of just accomplishment. And, you know, when you enter into Pakistan and India, you're also entering into a little more familiar territory because there is that British infrastructure. People spoke English more commonly, and they were used to Western travelers. And so I did feel like, when you say, we were kind of coming home.
Yeah, it was, and we were ready for a break, so we turned left and went up to Kashmir.
Yes.
And Kashmir is this mountainous land. Part Hindu, part Muslim. It's today conflicted, so I don't think there's much tourism there. But it was a dreamland, and even in British times, the elites, whether they were Indian people or English people, they would go up to Kashmir to get away from the heat. And there's a lake there, and to this day, it's got the same houseboats that housed the British big shots a century ago. And from the journal I wrote, we closed the deal on our houseboat on Lake Dal, checked in, and within minutes, we're lounging on our sun deck. The houseboy stopped by to tell us that the hot water was prepared and we could shower before our duck dinner would be served. We were like rags to riches.
Yeah, we'd spent, all these weeks living on mutton and lamb's eyeballs and...
Tough buff, we called it.
Water buffalo.
Water buffalo, yeah. And you'd chew it. You couldn't swallow it, but you'd chew all the nutritional value out of it. Then you'd spit out the gristle.
Yeah, it was finally getting the payoff for all of our hard travel.
And you could sit up there and the world would come to you on this floating commerce, and we'd have a family that was at our beck and call. And I remember you and I come from a more of an egalitarian world, and we weren't comfortable with our own servants. And it is more of a norm in India than what we were comfortable with.
Yeah, I did find that part of it uncomfortable. You know, yeah, we were traveling and you saw abject poverty all the time, and it was really horrible. And then you saw that big divide between the rich and the poor. Remember when we were staying in Jaipur in India, and we were staying in a Maharaja's palace?
Oh, yeah.
We were in this lap of luxury. We were just paying like, I don't know, $2 a night or something to stay in this Maharaja's palace that was now a hotel. And, you know, we'd be at breakfast eating at this long table, just the two of us. And servants are hovering over us, just waiting to pour milk into our cornflakes. And you'd think, oh, this is great. But it was really awful because, like you say, we were from a very egalitarian mindset.
We were almost rude. We almost said, get out of here. But it was totally inappropriate for us to do that.
Yeah.
And then the finale of the trip, the Emerald City of the Hippie Trail, is Kathmandu. And I'll never forget the square. Here's a bit how I wrote about it. This is a tangled, medievalish world of tall, terraced temples decorated with erotic art. Fruit and vegetable stands, thin, wild, and hungry people praying, going through rituals. Children oblivious to it all, playing tag among the frozen Buddhas. Rickshaws dodged bread carts. Holy men were holy. Beggars begged. Hawkers hawked. And dwarfs and hunchbacks did their thing. I wasn't very politically correct back as a 23-year-old. But Kathmandu met my expectations. What was your memory of Kathmandu?
My biggest memory was pie and chai.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was like our last night there. It was a little restaurant that catered to Westerners on the hippie trail that served fresh apple pie. And you're surrounded by fellow travelers. They're playing like the Stones and Dylan on the stereo system. And, you know, and you just look around and I'm surrounded by that's John Lennon scribbling in that notebook over there. You know, I swear that's Cardinal Richelieu playing chess. And it gave us a chance to reflect on our trip and say, we did it. 3,500 miles, all the things that we'd endured, and we finally reached the end of the hippie trail. We are in hippie nirvana. And we experienced the ups and the downs of travel, that kind of cocktail of good and bad and happy and sad that's what we would call life itself.
For me, it was becoming friends with the world and realizing you can give sparkle to your life by reaching out and getting out of your comfort zone. And, you know, young people ask me now, because a lot of people say, oh, I wish I could have done that, but you can't do the hippie trail anymore. I think you can do that now, but you can't go on the exact road we went on. But I get to talk to young people who have had this kind of experience just last year, and they had the same approach to travel that we had. They just found a different trail.
I think what you said about getting out of their comfort zone, that's what travel is. You know, yes, the geography of the world is better known today and these countries are better known, but the essence of travel in some ways is that you have to find out a way to navigate those something that's uncomfortable and unusual and learning how to look at the world around you that's strange to you, but embrace it.
In other words, you can't be so risk averse that you're in this guarded hotel where nothing can go wrong. You go overland, you get your fingers dirty in the culture. And people can do that in their travels. And then they take home the most beautiful souvenir. And that's just an appreciation that this world is a delightful place to get to know.
That's the feeling that I had when we sat there at Pie and Chai. We'd experienced friends that had helped us, the wonders of the Taj Mahal in Kashmir, and we experienced the bad stuff. Dysentery, boredom, long bus rides, hunger, difficulty even getting food in our stomachs.
Needles bending as they go into your arm by some doctor that wants to make sure you got every stamp in your yellow international certificate of vaccination. But Gene, there's some fresh apple pie just coming out of the oven. And look at the Himalayas around us.
Amen.
Gene, thanks so much for sharing that adventure with me, for helping me on this book and joining us today.
Thank you, brother.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton, Kaz Murrah-Hall, and Donna Bardsley at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington. Affiliate relations are by Sheila Gerzoff. Website uploads are by Andrew Wakeling and Sherry Court. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank. When you're on a road trip, you can listen to Travel with Rick Steves on one of more than 500 other radio stations. You'll find a list of where and when at ricksteves.com/radio. And we'll look for you again next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.